This is Joshua Koenig interviewing Mrs. Ambiel at 1 o'clock on November 15th, 2001. Mrs. Ambiel, would you please state your full name and spell your last?
Lenka G. Ambiel, A-M-B-U-E-H-L, Georgia.
Mrs. Ambiel, would you please start out by stating some background information about yourself, please?
My mother came over from Bulgaria, she was pregnant with me, and I was born in May 22nd, 1925. I remember the good life here in this area. There are Armenians, Hungarians, Mexicans, and we were very friendly. We never argued, we didn't fight. And what I remember mostly was at Christmas time, especially the Armenians, they would have a table set with all their goodies, and the doors were wide open. Anybody could come in and go out. And another thing I remember mostly was some of the young men in this area had instruments, and on Fridays they had a band at the Lincoln Place Center, and on Fridays that's where we went to dance, and that's where I met my husband. And he went on into the service, and I worked, and we had a very good relationship with five of us girls. And what else can I say? Parents were strict parents. We had certain chores on Saturdays. The porches had to be hosed off. The sidewalks had to be hosed off. At that time, there was a lot of falling dust, I guess, from the plants, but that was strictly something we had to do every Saturday. We had to, on Saturdays, we had to polish my brother's shoes, iron their shirts, and get all ready for Sunday for church. And we waited on the men. The women were taught that. And we were taught with certain chores at home. When I got my first job, I had to give part of my money to my dad. And I can remember one time I went into the Carp's department store at that time, and I wanted to buy a suit. It was a three-piece suit. It was beautiful, I thought. And I bought it, and it was to be done with payments, and I was to get it out by Easter. Kept making my payments, and Easter was shortly here, and I didn't get my suit paid off, so my dad taught me a lesson, and he paid it, and I got my suit. We walked to the high school, rain, snow, or shine. We walked out to the high school on certain days. We were given a nickel, and sometimes we would pull our nickels together and take a taxi cab. But if we didn't use that nickel to take a cab to school, we stopped at Dressel Dairy's for an ice cream cone. I mean, it was a double dip big thing for a nickel. We played a lot of games in the street. We kicked the cans. We played a hide and go seek where you drew a map and to see if they could find you.
How did your parents meet?
My mother was from a town called Smilevo in Yugoslavia, and they were burned out, and they ended up in Bitolia. And my mother's folks stayed in Bitolia, and my dad's folks went into Bulgaria, but they stayed in contact, and then they married. My mother went into Bulgaria, and at that time my father says all the brothers had to live in one house, and their father was the big chief, and he bought the clothes, he bought the food, they had to pay him, and I guess my dad didn't care for that idea, so he came over here without my mother and got a job, and then went back and got her and decided to come back. His brother came with him, but he didn't like it. He went back, so he was the only one in the family that stayed here. in 1958, I think it was. Leo and I didn't have any children. We have relatives over there, and we tried to adopt children here from an Illinois child place, and it just took years and years and years of interview. Finally had some relatives come over here from Yugoslavia. Her husband was the army attaché, and so she came along with him, and we talked about children, and she said, oh, you can come over here and you can get all you want. So we pursued that, and we went over there, and we got a boy and a girl. Tommy was 2.5, Kathy was 6 months old. And they've been good children. I've had no problems with them. I have 5 granddaughters. My daughter is in Florida with 2 girls, and I have a son here, Tom, with 3 girls. The oldest one's right now in England on a semester of learning, and I have one in Washington University, and the other one's in high school, and the 2 in Florida are one's in high school and one's in junior high.
You were mentioning your childhood earlier. Did the community center play a large role in your childhood?
Very big role, because we had Sunday school there, and they sent 2 ladies from the Methodist Church, is that across the street from the library here, and Miss Gibson and another lady. And we went there every Sunday for Sunday school. And then on the way home, we were given orders to pick up bread at the bakery. And we'd pick up bread and probably eat the inside of it out before we got home. And another thing there, they used to have a summer activities where we made quilts. They taught us all kind of crafts. We had Bible school there. We had plays. We had a festival, I think, like in October this time of the year. We picked a queen. At that time, Mary Cambarian was queen. Yes, a big part. Yeah, when you had something to do, that's where you went. We didn't have nothing to do, that's where you went.
You had also spoken of holidays at the community center. What do you most remember about the community center's role in holidays?
I don't remember too much about holidays when I was younger. They had Halloween parties. I think the Mother's Club improved some of that in later years. They had parties for the children. But we put a play, if I can remember, we even put a play on there. I can't remember completely anymore about that. But we put plays on.
Obviously, the community center was a large role in your life because you said that's where you met your husband.
Yes.
Could you tell me that story, please?
Well, we went there every Friday. They came from across the tracks to dance down here, and he asked me to dance, and I guess the next Friday maybe we danced again, and then one Friday he asked me to take me on a Demolay boat. That's when Admiral was running, and we went on a boat, and then he went into service. We didn't make no big promises, but we wrote a lot of email and so forth. And then one year Charlie was coming home, and he asked if his mother and dad could go, and we'd buy a ring, and we bought a ring, and we were engaged. And then he came home in June, I can't think of what year that was right now, and then he would be sent away again, and the war ended. And his mother and dad lived way out in on Palm Street in St. Louis, and he didn't have a car. He had to drive a streetcar, and if he stayed at my house too long, he missed the streetcar. And finally, he kept coming over, you know, and my dad said, "Now, if this is the man here, this is the guy, decide what you're going to do." So we got married on December the 15th, 1945. And
now, going back to your parents, you had mentioned that your father came over here by himself. Where did he stay?
Well, the way he speaks, the way he used to tell the stories, they were like sheds. A lot of sheds here, and that's where he stayed. And then he met the Rozovs. They became godparents. They didn't have any children, and they took him in. When he came back with my mother. But they stayed. They were all bachelors, and they stayed in these houses. But when he came back with my mother, the Rozovs helped him, and they became our godparents and called her grandmother and everything. And at that time, Mr. Rozov had a truck. He sold fruit. With his truck, he went up and down the street with produce, tomatoes and all that. And I can remember many times he'd come home, and if things were kind of ready to spoil or get bad, he'd give them to my mother. And I can remember a bowl of fruit on a table where maybe my mother had taken the bad parts out of the apples or so forth. But they helped them a lot then. She learned to cook and she cooked a lot and knew how to handle all that. And she used to make jelly, cook grape jelly. Never bought any jelly. And my mother never knew how to make cakes. Our desserts was jelly bread. She made a lot of bread and jelly bread.
From doing research on Lincoln Place, along with the bachelor housing, there was also a large role played by coffee shops and community living.
Yes, coffee houses. They were still going while my dad was still living. Duke's had a coffee house. And then there was a building here by Alibox. And they housed a lot of people, and it was like a department store. It had clothing at the bottom. And then there was this place in Madison, Paul Chip's place. It still exists. It was rooms, and they had a bath, a toilet at one end. And immigrants came and stayed there.
Did the coffee houses play any role in your father's life before your mother came over?
Not that I know of. Just to talk, I guess, just to visit with the men and talk their problems over. But while he was married with my mother and dad, that was kind of like an evening out. They'd go, they'd play cards. And they didn't play for money or nothing. A lot of times they'd come home with candy bars or something. They'd come home with that kind of stuff. It was just a place to go and talk about maybe what each one heard from their relatives, and a lot of them were married and had wives and never went back. I know that.
You had mentioned that the Rozovs helped your parents mm-hmm. greatly. What can you tell me about the sense of community from Lincoln Place?
Anybody would do anything for anybody. My dad was kind of like a handyman, and they'd call him. He'd put a door up for somebody, you know. you should hear a lot about him. He just did things. Tiled. Matter of fact, he built this house. They just helped each other, whether it be food, funerals, or they just worked together. And the nationality didn't mean a thing. I mean, most of my friends were Armenians, more Armenians than Macedonians. And there was not that deal, now you can't go with them, or you can't do this, or can't do that. And we had Hungarians. And what I remember mostly, too, in the summertime, people didn't close their doors or windows. And the Hungarians across from my mother used to be Nagis. They'd have Hungarian music. And next door was Mexican. And I mean, you could hear it. You know, down the streets, and you could just hear their music going all the time. And everybody kept their place up. It was a neat-looking place. I regret that all the young people, as soon as their parents died, they had to cross the tracks and buy houses across the tracks instead of staying here. Some of them wish they had stayed. And I remember when my girl and son was growing up, when I was raising them, they didn't have the relationship with their age of use in this area. They just weren't there here. And when I was growing up, there was a lot of my age, you know, and more of us. And when they grew up, there wasn't that. And I think they really missed a lot. Where if some of the friends of mine my age stayed, and their children, if they were all in this area, that we'd have the same relationship. But like I said, they all moved across the tracks.
That's interesting that you use that term, across the tracks.
We were always sensible. I mean, we were the hunkies across the tracks. Matter of fact, I don't know if my husband told you this, but when he was dating me, his relatives warned him about coming down here. But it was really there's taverns on Needing House, and there's some Mexicans at that time. There was a little episode where they stabbed each other, but otherwise, everybody had the doors open, the windows were open. No air conditioning, maybe that's why. But all our doors were open. As a matter of fact, in the summertime, we slept at them, you know. And I can't think of nothing else, but I probably wished I'd thought of something after you're gone.
How has that term, across the tracks, affected Lincoln Place? Or how had it in the past?
I don't know, but let me tell you, the story is a lot like, you know, Andy Phillips and all that. All the children from this area have done great. I have a brother that has a high school named after him in Blue Springs, Missouri, you know. Matter of fact, I tried to get that in a press record, and they didn't print it. That's the feeling we had, that anything we did, they didn't want to advertise it. But maybe we had problems with dating, although, like I said, I end up with Leland, because a lot of the Armenian girls, friends that I've had, they married Armenians right from that were down here, because we were together. I mean, I remember taking walks. There were no houses in that area down that way, and we used to just take walks, pair up, you know, and take walks. And only one of my friends married a soldier from the Depot. Or she made it Scottsville, I think. But the rest of them married people that they were raised together. Like Andy Hagopian, he married Ange, and Bob Persajian married a Hagopian girl. That's what it was. Mary Cambrian married Asadorian boy. I mean, it was all here.
You had said that earlier, that, and just now, that your group of friends was made up of Armenians, Hungarians, and all these different
Mexicans,
ethnic groups.
Mm-hmm.
How did that affect your life? Was there a sharing of culture, of these different cultures within your life?
Our food, and like I said, at Christmas time, and our food was about the same. And we did it, and growing up, I guess because the family didn't speak at home, it was not, you know, my parents did not, that Armenians, or we didn't hear that at home. Matter of fact, even the color, we never heard that. They never preached none of that. So it never did bother us, to us, you know.
When Leland was overseas, you mentioned that you had worked. What was your occupation?
I worked at American Steel in the payroll department, and then I worked at Union Starch in the payroll department.
Did you work when he came back from the war?
Yes. And he came home and he didn't have any money. He had $300 mustering out pay, and he used that to buy a suit for us to get married. And he was lucky enough that before he went in service, he worked at the depot, and he went back in there. So he walked to work, and I walked to work. And we lived at my mother's for 2 years. And we decided that we wanted a place, and there was an old house, almost the size of that one right there. We tore it down, saved some of the wood, and we built this place. It used to be a chicken. People, ladies that had this place raised chickens. And made the whole, well, at first it was probably living quarters, but they lived next door, and then they used this place to raise these chickens. And I remember seeing them, they'd go outside and they'd dig a hole and they'd bury their feathers and whatever down in the ground.
When I interviewed Leland, he had mentioned that most of your family holidays were spent with your family directly.
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell me about family gatherings?
Well, I had a father that wanted us there all the time. And when my brothers moved away and had a family, they came. And you would think that prodigal sons were coming home because he cooked and he made things and suggested making things, and he'd get in a car, he'd think of something to run downtown and buy it, and he'd be home 5 or 10 minutes and he'd think of something else and he'd go again. But to him, that was the greatest thing. And then I have nephews, that one's in Texas now. They remember that, and they said that's the most memorable thing, that the most important thing in their life, coming down here. And at that time when they came, they took them out to the levee, and they just played around in the area, sled down, so, you know, they used the sleds at Christmas time. But every holiday they came. And after my dad passed away, they had children and grandchildren, and it kind of, then they were coming to their house. But while my mother was living, they tried to come a couple of times, and it was hard because when one could come, the other one would come because of the kids and all that, but that ended.
What were your holidays comprised of? How did Christmas?
Well, Christmas, there was church. That was midnight services. We had to go to midnight services. And we were forced to go to church. I don't care how late you stayed the night before, you had to get up and go to church. And we knew that. We didn't even try to stay away or not get up or whatever. But there's a lot of day holidays, and it was church, and then meals at home.
You've mentioned food quite often also, and some of us in the class for one of our projects were trying to put together a Lincoln Place cookbook. What can you tell me about food?
A lot of the food my mother made were pots. She used to make green bean stew and a lot of Lenten stuff. A bean soup without meat, and a green bean soup, nut soup like a stew. A lot of bread, fried peppers in the summer and tomatoes. We used to make tomato sandwiches, butter and tomato sandwiches. I don't know why, maybe even to this day I'm not a meat eater. Not because I don't want to be vegetarian or anything, I just... And I can remember, they used to buy chickens. People come down there and sell chickens. This lady are on a... Even the ice was that way. The ice man... what were their names? They sold ice anyway. But she'd get a chicken and she'd boil it. She'd make soup, then she'd make rice with it, and then she would bread and fry it. But those chickens had a lot of flavor. I used to know she did that, and there's no way you could do that. It just doesn't have, you would cook one and the broth don't even taste like it used to taste. Really, they grow them faster now, and I don't know what it is, but she used to do that. Like I said, meat, Christmas, Easter, we had to have lamb. That had to be, we had to have lamb. Christmas and the holidays were the treat days. You know, we had apples, oranges. I remember at Christmas time, big bowls of nuts. At that time, Commonwealth, where my dad worked, used to give them a box with fruit and nuts. And it was a big deal then. But like I said, my mother didn't know how to make no desserts. The only dessert she knew how to make was baklava. And when my sister and I got, I guess we were in high school, and we took cooking classes, you know, and we learned to cook, and we were reading recipes, and we'd go to these friends' house. I had a very good friend across the tracks, Alva Mae Weston. I used to go there and they'd eat these things, you know, and so we got interested in, so we were baking then, and we could tell you stories where her and I would bake stuff, and it'd be there, and one brother, this Gilbert, would come home and he'd see it there. He would eat the whole thing and melt. You know, they got to where they enjoyed the sweets. So there's a lot of stories. We made cakes, and we didn't really know about baking, and we had to put it in small pans, and the cake ran over in the oven. Anyway, we learned to bake, and matter of fact, I do a lot of it now. We have a bake sale at Christmas, and we've been baking since 1st of October, and I'm the mixer. I've always enjoyed it. I was the kind of a person where if I was down and out and depressed a little bit, I went to the cookbooks, recipes, to see what I could fix or mess around with.
You had mentioned that there was a sharing of ethnicity and culture throughout Lincoln Place. How has your culture been preserved in your own family?
Until my parents were living, it was real well, but when you have mixed marriages, it's hard, very hard. Even though I went over to Yugoslavia and adopted two Macedonians, Tommy spoke it when I got him, and I wished I kept it up, but I didn't. But I have a good family relationship here. My son comes every Sunday, We may eat something. I may make something big or not. But they come every Sunday, and we visit that way because it's hard anymore. It seems like during the week they work and they're busy, and we hardly see each other. But we do at church, and then on Sundays they come here, and we'll have something. That's about it. It's not like it used to be. And intermarriages, it's hard. You're used to a certain kind of foods, certain kind of eating, and that. It's things that Leland just has never acquired to this day. But another thing my mother used to make was, what do you call this? It's something like a quiche in big pans, and made it with spinach. During Lent was made with sauerkraut, believe it or not. And with leek. And it was mostly a lot of carbohydrates. Mostly. So. I don't know if she knew of other desserts to make or not. I maybe couldn't remember coming over here, but there was not no desserts. Like I said, jelly bread, a lot of jelly, homemade bread and jelly.
You had mentioned that just a minute ago, that it's hard to preserve through the mixed marriages. Do you feel that other people from Lincoln Place had that same struggle?
I really don't know. I think maybe everybody else but the Armenians. They seem to have stayed together. Maybe in their homes they were given orders to marry Armenians. I don't know. But I would say they're the only ones that have been able to stay together. I don't know. I think they'd be the only ones. Otherwise, I have not heard of where they can't. A lot of us Macedonians married outside of Macedonia. My best friend, Helen Papadino, she married a soldier from the depot. She ended up in Texas. I can't remember anymore. Well, she's in Texas. Helen Christie's married a guy from Detroit. I would say not the Macedonian. Maybe other families, but not mine. I've tried to keep some of the traditions. Like at Easter, I have lamb and all that kind of stuff. But although the Tommy and his wife lived with my mother for 10 years. They lived upstairs. And the girls came down, and she loved them. And she let them comb her long hair, take it out of the braids, and she used to make them coffee, Turkish coffee in little cups. And now they talk about that all the time. And every time they come here, they want to go by the house just to look. They remember that, and then Tommy and Tammy worked before they had the children, and they stopped here, and I used to have supper for them. Then when the children, they had children, they'd come here a lot and eat, and I was more of a vegetable person, salads and that, and they all liked it, and they love to eat it now. They still eat it to this day. And they like salads and green beans and all the cabbages. And some of the things they ask me to make, lentil soup, they love it. And I make that for them. And cabbage rolls. And Tammy has not learned to make them. And so they always say Baba. Baba makes them. I don't mind doing it. I thank God that I've been healthy enough to do what I do. What else? The only thing, too, is Leland and I have followed the strict rules, fast rules in our religion, and Leland was not Orthodox when I married him, and I'll tell you the story was when we were going together, we talked about church. At that time, the Orthodox Church in Madison didn't have a priest, and we talked about what church and so forth, and he said, well, he said, I don't understand that, man. At the other church, when we'd have a priest come in and do the services, he spoke in Macedonian and Slavonic, and he didn't understand it. So he said he'd be happy with a Presbyterian church. I said, well, I want to go to a church where my husband's sitting next to me. So we got married in Presbyterian church, and I was so used to going to church every Sunday, and he wouldn't get up and go to church. He'd stay in bed. And then I'd go with my parents. I didn't say nothing to him. I went with my parents. And as he got to know my friends, Macedonian friends, finally one Sunday he said, wake me up and I'll go to church with you. So that's how it started, and he converted, and now he's very active, and the converts are more active than the other ones. So he's out there cutting grass 6 hours a day, once a week, and he's very involved.
What can you tell me about the Orthodox religion?
It's a rough one. it's hard. it's the Catholics and the religion work, okay. There's a lot of fast days, there's confession, and it's just those things. And if you aren't growing up in it, it's hard to accept it. We've had a lot of converts, and like I said, they're better than some of us that were raised in it. But I found that I learned more about the religion since our minister's a convert. And he's had classes in that. Where before, when we went to the church in Madison, you were taken by the hand to that church, and it was spoken in Slavonic, and you just knew to sit quiet in church. And they didn't have confession or nothing of that, because those priests, my mother tells a story that in Europe, they stopped confession because the priests would snitch on the confession. And so they eliminated it. But here, the Orthodox Church in America demands it. It's a hard church. To be a good Orthodox Christian, it's rough.
We've been talking today quite a bit about change throughout time. How have you seen change in Lincoln Place?
Those that have moved in here, I imagine they get these houses cheaper, the rent is cheaper. It has not been kept up like it was when these all ethnic people lived here. And they're more and more afraid. We don't leave doors open. Matter of fact, I don't know the names of the people down the street, where I knew everybody's house. I knew their name on all the streets. We don't do that. We don't know that now. It took quite a while before I learned the name of the lady across the street. I don't know. You say hello and wave and that's it. Before, you were in and out, It's gotten a little better within a few of these houses here. A couple bought the house, one over from here. And they really keep it nice, and we talk. Then right next door is a relative. They came here two or three years ago and visited. And then they put their name in with a green card, and their name got pulled, so they were able to come. So they got a 10-year visit here with a green card. And they lived here a couple months with me, and their little apartment was open next door. Miss St. Ivany wasn't renting it to anybody because she was afraid of being by herself. So she said they could stay over there, so they stayed over there. Now she died, and they bought it. They bought it. They've been here a year and a half, and they have acquired enough money, $26,000, in paid cash. But they're very, very frugal, you know. And so now it was a little apartment on this side, and then she lived on the other side. Well, now they're breaking a door through. They want to make it one whole house. And anyway, like I said, when you go out now, that lady and the man over in one house over will talk about the trees. And another lady, Brenda Whitaker, in a big Bosser town, she has a little restaurant she opened now on Metering House. There's contact with the neighbors where there wasn't any for a long time. Long time.
But this contact is different.
Still, yeah, it's different because we're not in and out of the houses like you were with the ethnic people. I mean, and they'd make things and bring it, and they'd bring you something they made. And if there's someone died, they took food over, and you were in and out of the houses. We were in and out of the houses all the time. And if someone was sick, I remember my mother taking soup to her neighbor, and then the Weezer's boy had diabetes, a young juvenile, and he used to hide under the porch and eat candy and all that. And when he died, I mean, it was a big thing. You know, the whole community was upset, and then they all helped. And when there's a wedding, everybody went to the weddings. And the first funeral that I can remember as a teenager. There was a funeral, and they took the cat, they walked it up to the tracks, and then it got on a hearse and turned on. Those kind of things. And then we had this church. This church belonged to the Macedonians. And on certain holidays, St. Cyril and Methodius, the two saints that wrote the Slavic language, oh, that was such a big, they had flowers all over the yard and the door, and we had picnics. We had picnics, and this man that was a godfather took his truck, and we all got on the truck, and we went out to, I don't know what his name was. He's a Macedonian. He had a farm. I got pictures where we're out there. Everybody's out there on these picnics. It was a big deal on those holidays, religious day holidays, but they were big, and they're not as big now. Our church is not all Macedonians. It's a lot of converts, and I guess the reason we don't have all that, maybe that would throw them out, or they'd feel different. In other words, a tradition that the Macedonians held, they're not pushing it with this church now. Our traditions maybe are at home, but not there.
What traditions do you still try to preserve then?
We still have the church's name day, St. Name Day. That's about it.
How has all this change affected you personally, then?
Not really bad, but I think about it sometime, and I feel sorry for those of our children that have grown up that they're missing all that, they're not seeing all that, or didn't experience what I experienced. Now, they tell me in other states they do. They say in Detroit, big Macedonian community. And matter of fact, a young Crackers restaurant is married to a girl here in Granite, and he misses it. They have dances there, the circle dances, the holidays and all that. But there it's really big. And matter of fact, the Macedonian organization had a convention in Chicago in September, and they said it was packed. That it kind of died down for a while. People weren't going, but they said it was just really packed. I had a magazine from that. I don't know if you'd been interested to look at it. It was explaining the convention and all that. Just full. From all over and Canada's another town, another town, I mean, another state or whatever you want, province, whatever you want to call it. But there, the Macedonians are very active too. And Detroit has church, Macedonian churches, two of them. And the Armenians have one up there too. And they're very strong, and their ethnic, their holidays are carried on. Andrew Hagopian says they're very strong there and carry all their traditions.
Why do you think this change has occurred then? Why is there a sense of a loss of tradition and
the
culture?
The intermarriages. That's all it could be. That's all.
Is there a sense of Americanization then?